Real gon' recognize, real gon' recognize, real gon' recognize, real, real. Phony gon' recognize, still, I reckon I will.
Like we always do with this time, I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky. I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
I'm a kid on the TV, mama, I'ma put this shine.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to another episode of the KIRP Radio Show. Another beautiful evening, man. Another beautiful Sunday, 10/21/2012 of this great election year. And there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of people that got to be in a lot of places, and I am one of them, let me tell you. Just jumped off Interstate 40, trying my best to get here in time so I could get the show going on. And you know what? I do a lot, man, for you guys. So shout out to everybody out there who do a lot for me, who listens to the show every single Sunday and always come through to show us a little bit of love on the KRP Radio Show. You guys make us the number one black conservative radio show, talk radio, Southeastern United States, with over 5.6 million listeners out there, man. And you guys know that you are B.I.G. in my book, and I definitely appreciate all you guys out there for showing us a lot of love. The love is definitely felt, man. As I look at my email right now, trying my best to get this new equipment up and a new server, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. And I like the look, man. I like the feel of it, but, you know, sometimes new isn't always the best. Sometimes I'm old school. I like to keep the old. I like the old to stay in place. The old is dependable. So all you old school folks out there who's still working on ADATs, that's a little bit of studio humor for you folks out there. If you know what an ADAT is, or if you're still working on reels, or anybody out there still using the VCR, shout out to my VCR users. I don't know how you're using the VCR. I don't know how you care about a VCR today, but you know, it is what it is. I got a collection of VHS tapes in here that I like to dig into sometimes. Need to get that stuff changed over as soon as possible. But anyway, Last week, crazy show, crazy good show. The ratings came in the ratings came in by the boatload, man. I got a lot of comments. There was a lot of conversation about last week's show. A lot of people having a lot of great things to say. And as always, we got people who's talking the negative talk. You know, always got something to blog about, always got something to say, always got a comment. But I love it, man. You know, whatever you got to say, you guys know how to reach, man. KIRPradio@gmail.com. That's Nicole, that's John, Nikki. There's a whole host of folks on there who answers that email. As I always say, make sure that you got a topic in the subject line. Make sure you got a topic there. We try our best, folks, to answer everybody out there. But I've been getting email from people who have been saying that, you never respond to me. I guess you don't agree with what I'm talking about, or you don't believe like I believe. That's not it, folks. That's definitely not it. Hit me up on Facebook, man. And speaking of that, I'll give you guys a Facebook call tag. It's KIRP Radio, facebook.com/KIRP Radio. And, you know, look for us out there, man. Excuse me. I'm sorry. My bad. KIRP Radio Show. I don't even know what my own stuff is. Look for us out there, man. There's several different ways to contact us and share your information and, you know, share share the conversations that we're having with other folks out there and the topics that we're having on the show. You know, it is what it is, man. But I'm excited. That's why I'm rushing. If you got anybody who listened to the show before, you know that sometimes I get ahead of myself and I get to talking fast. When you're talking fast, there's things that you might miss. And, you know, it's not that I'm talking fast. You're just listening slow. That's that pimp lingo. That's Chicago stuff. That's Barack Obama team, all the pimps. Shout out to all the pimps out there in Chi-Town. Anyway, folks, let me get on, man. Let me tell you guys what we got for you this afternoon, this evening, for some of you folks out there this night. It is 8 p.m. on the East Coast, but, you know, I got a lot of people on the West Coast listening to the show. Shout out to all my West Coast listeners out there, all my Burbank people, all my San Diego people, all my people down south in Florida. Definitely B.I.G. shout out to you. We got Providence. We got a bunch of colleges out there. I'll get some shout outs to that later as we get them up, and I'll try my best to read them off. But, you know, B.I.G. shout out to all you guys out there. But tonight, folks, tonight we got something a little bit special. And the reason I think it's special is because I know that there's a movie out there that flew over a lot of folks' heads, and I know it did. And the title of the movie is called Fear of a Black Republican, and there's a question in that movie, and that's what we bring into the forefront of tonight, and we ask the question: Does the Republican Party, and this is directly from the movie, does the Republican Party really want more black Republicans? That's an ultimate question. That's a question that I ask. I also engage. You guys know I'm politically active. I'm out there. I'm on the front lines. I'm on the back lines. I'm behind the scenes. I do more and commit more than I really should and than I really can honor a lot of the times, but I bust my butt to try to make those commitments. I think everybody knows that. That goes without saying, because I really care about the political landscape of this country and the way that we're headed, and definitely speaking for the black community, because there's a lot of lies and there's a lot of old rhetoric, a lot of different tales, and I call them folk tales, and it's just a lot of misinformation that I know, being from the inner city, being from the rural area, the country area, all of that, you know, being from the inner city of some of the larger cities and some of the smaller cities that I've lived in that you've ever seen, you know, I understand that there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's also a lot of people who are traditionally involved with politics, not caring what the political affiliates or the political representatives are actually doing in the community, but only supporting these different parties because their mama did or their pop did or whoever, you know, because a celebrity does. And, you know, that's what they do in politics, man. They incite celebrities. They, you know, they champion these celebrities and they bring them along and they throw them in front of your face and they shake hands with them and they kick it. They take pictures. And it's somebody that you love, and now all of a sudden you look at a type like, let's say, a Michael Jordan, you know, not defaming that man's names, but you look at Michael Jordan. If Michael Jordan would take a picture with someone like anybody but Mitt Romney, all of a sudden everybody would be for that person that Michael Jordan took pictures with, at least the basketball community would look at that person a little bit different just because Michael Jordan, took a picture with that person. So, you know, that's totally wrong. I think that we got to get away from things like that. We got to start looking at the information. We have to start taking our asses down to the state house, sitting on the floor in the back behind the scenes and listening to some of these legislators legislate. Understand what's going on with these bills and actually reading these bills, taking them back to our communities, having an event. I don't care if you go to a community center. I don't care if you make flyers with bullet points and start putting this information out to people who don't attend these meetings and who don't care to go to the state house and who could care less about politics. Because the thing is, this stuff involves us all. This stuff matters for us all. It matters to the forefront. It matters to the homes. It matters to our communities. So what we're going to do tonight, we're going to bring Kevin Williams on from Fear of a Black Republican, the producer, director, and editor. He's going to come on and he's going to talk about this movie, talk about how he made this movie, some of the interactions that he had. I believe it's a wonderful story, and I would love to hear the behind the scenes. That's why we bring it to you. But right now, we got to take one commercial, and when we come back, we're going to bring Charlotte from StretchingYourBudget.com. You guys know every quarter after she comes on and she does her budget segment, she tells everyone how to live a little bit more frugal, how to save a couple dollars, how to coupon. You know, that's what we do on KRP Radio. We are for the people. We are by the people. We do what we do to help everybody out there. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back in just after one commercial. I mean, after 30 seconds, we're going to come back and we're going to bring Charlotte on the air and she's going to tell you guys how to save a little bit more money. You're listening to the KIRP Radio Show, baby. 619-638-8559 is the number. www.kirpradioshow. If you got to make a comment, please hit number one and we'll try to get you on the queue as soon as possible. You listen to the number one black talk conservative radio show, Southeast of the United States. 5.6 million, baby. Be right back.
I believe you can tell a lot about our governor and lieutenant governor by the way they lead our state. We have great challenges facing us and need strong, courageous, visionary leadership to see us through. I'm Dan Forrest, conservative candidate for North Carolina lieutenant governor. As an architect, senior partner, and office president of the state's largest design firm, I was accustomed to solving complex problems for my clients. Architects are creative problem solvers, and that's what we need more of in Raleigh. And we need more business leaders, not more politicians. Over the past 10 months, I've visited the majority of the counties in North Carolina multiple times. I've traveled over 80,000 miles, listened to thousands of North Carolinians share their solutions to the challenges we face. Did you know North Carolina ranks 41st in the nation in K-12 education, 36th in graduation rate, 43rd in unemployment, 38th in business tax climate, 42nd in illegal immigration? This is just not acceptable. I believe it's time to look at the failed policies of our current governor and lieutenant governor and demand real leadership for North Carolina. As your next lieutenant governor, I will tackle these issues head on and provide the strong, courageous, visionary leadership needed to lead our state through these challenging times. Over the next few months, I'll be sharing solutions to these challenges, and I hope you will take the time to share them with your friends and family and give me your feedback. I believe we can turn America around. And I believe we should start right here in North Carolina. I'm Dan Forrest, conservative candidate for North Carolina Lieutenant Governor, and I ask for your support.
Run, Forrest, run!
Welcome back to the KIRP Radio Show, baby. This is Love in the Midnight Hour. Let me stop. One of those like late night love song DJs or VJs or disc jockeys or whatever you call it. Have you guys ever, do you still listen to those late night? I don't know if people really listen to the radio anymore, but remember they would get like real close up to the mic and they try to sound all sexy. They say, you know what, this is a love hour and I'm taking dedications out there. This goes to Charlotte from StretchingYourBudget.com and
We love what you do.
Charlotte, how are you?
Good, how are you? That reminds me of that Delilah. Have you ever heard Delilah on 99.5?
Oh,
that's
man.
Local here, but.
Yeah.
She
we all have.
That late night.
That's when we call in, like when we were in high school, we call in and say, I want to dedicate this to the person who's asleep right now, not listening to this show. And, you know, they would never hear the dedication. You know, you go to school next day embarrassed, thinking that they heard it, and they didn't. I did that. I don't know if anybody else did that, but I did. I take it you didn't do that.
I did that. No.
So, okay, I was all alone. See, anyway, Charlotte, what's up?
What's up? Nothing much.
I know that Thanksgiving is drawing near, and I know first we have, you know, Halloween, and we did talk about that last week, but right off the bat, because I don't know what you have for us this week, but I just want to ask you, are there any Thanksgiving deals out there right now? I mean, is there any way I can go ahead and get my turkey, or do you even, is that even the right thing to do right now, or should I just wait and get the turkey?
Yeah, you're going to see turkeys going on sale probably in about 3 weeks, so just be a little bit more patient. But, yeah, you can definitely, you want to get your turkeys ahead of time. I mean, we always get our turkey, like, 1st of November usually, so.
Yeah.
Yep. You'll find some really good deals, but they haven't come out yet. Usually they try to get past Halloween, and then you'll start seeing all the stuff for Thanksgiving go on sale.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, that's cool because, you know, we want to, you know, I have an organization called the Loving Father Society. I love being a black father. That's our nonprofit. Shout out to Rashad and Contessa Woods from A Travel Beyond. That's my brother. That's my partner in that. And Kevin Daniels, the two VPs of the company who actually make the company go or the nonprofit go. But we want to get some we want to do something special this year. I think we're going to do a canned food drive. And we're probably going to wash cars. Who knows what we're going to do for this canned food, but we're going to do something extraordinary to be able to help other people. So I'm just wondering, you know, is there any way that we could get support in that? Is there anything that we can do outside of what we normally do in soliciting canned food from different organizations or different grocery lines or stores?
I mean, you know, those are definitely great ways. Your local grocery stores are typically always very willing to help with, you know, charitable organizations around the holiday season. But listeners that are local, you can definitely help by donating to it. But, I mean, I'm a huge advocate for, you know, like giving food during Thanksgiving and Christmas for families that don't normally have it. We do something in our church as well, but... I will constantly be posting, you know, deals of items that are on sale that you can pick up that week and donate.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be checking our website for things like that. But, you know, as far as, you know, trying to gain support outside of just people supporting you by providing food, I'm not very familiar with as far as a large scale. But, yeah, definitely there's always... tons of deals during the holiday season. So if everybody just gives, you know, a few cans here and there, that all adds up. And so, you know, people just don't think about how a small little, you know, donation can go such a long way. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll definitely support you. So if you send me information on that, I'll be glad to.
You got it,
that
as
on
you always
website.
Do. Yeah, I mean, you always help, though. You always help. You guys always come out, and I definitely appreciate that. But anyway, folks, I know you guys are sick of hearing me for a moment. So, Charlotte, let the folks know what you have for us this week.
Well, I just was going to talk about Halloween money-saving tips again since there's only 10 days left. So
great.
For those of you that don't celebrate, this can hold true in any kind of party or event you might have. So still good tips.
Sounds good.
Number one, and then we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, I think when we talked about it, but, you know, I am a huge Pinterest fan. I've talked about that on here before, but if you are not familiar with it, then, check out Pinterest.com. It's interest with a P in the front, if you don't know. But there are tons of ways and ideas for you for anything, but I've really been looking for Halloween ideas because I've just dropped the ball We're 10 days to Halloween. I do not have costumes for my kids. So I've really been trying to find some inspiration, and Pinterest has helped. But it's a great tool because it shows you how to use things that you already have on hand. So I would encourage everybody to just look around your house, whether it be for items to use for costumes or whether it be for, you know, decorations and that kind of thing. Just this weekend, I helped a friend set up a table at a fall festival. And she was looking for some inexpensive things to make a centerpiece, just a fall centerpiece. So, you know, what we did is we went outside and we found some really pretty leaves that had fallen, and we scattered those around the table. And then we found a really pretty pot that she had stuck in the cabinet. And so she bought a $3 mum, soak it in the pretty pot, and bought a few gourds and stuff that Walmart had already, you know, in a package, and that was like $3. So anyway, put long story short, once we put that all together and the leaves that we had from outside, it was a $6 centerpiece, and it covered the whole table, and it was really pretty. So you'll just be surprised at the things that you might already have around your house that you can use without spending a ton of money. And so, like I said, that holds true whether it's a Halloween party, a fall party, Christmas, whatever it might be. I would just really encourage you to take a look at things that you have, you know, already in your home without having to spend money. So repurpose, reuse, recycle is a huge thing. Also, with Pinterest and that same thing, it really teaches you to do things by yourself without going out and, you know, hiring a decorator or hiring a caterer or whatever. Everything is DIY, basically. So it teaches you how to, you know, find easy recipes and you cook them yourself and use decorations and that kind of thing. So, you know, that's just kind of the path that Americans are taking. And it's really interesting, but, you know, it's all about doing things yourself, spending less money because the economy is, you know, still pretty in rough shape. So just learning to use things that you have around your house and use your hands, be handy and useful. My tip number 3 is obviously using coupons. You can save so much money with coupons, even if you don't use them on a regular basis. Just saving a few dollars here and there is more than you would have saved if you didn't use it. So just take that extra step, do a little research, find some coupons for the items that you're using. And as always, my number one rule with that is don't be brand specific. So if there's items that you are looking for, just look for the like item with a different brand that might have a coupon at that time to get you your lowest out of pocket. Also, check out the dollar stores, or Target has a dollar spot. Walmart now has a dollar spot section. They have all kinds of things. Target I love because they are seasonal dollar sections. So, you know, right now I can find a lot of fall and Halloween items. During school, there was a lot of back-to-school stuff. So it goes with the season, so it's fitting for what you might be looking for during that time of the season. So check the dollar spot. And then lastly, my last tip is to buy items that are on sale after the holiday's over and prepare for the next year. So if you go all out for Halloween, then I would suggest going to the stores the next day, getting the items that are on sale, and storing them up for the next year so that you don't have to spend money. And a lot of times, I'm not sure about Halloween, but during Christmas, Dollar Tree will mark their items 50% off. Well, they're already a dollar, so that's 50 cents for items. So just check places like that you might not normally think, and hopefully that will help maximize your savings.
I think that's going to help a lot of people out there. I mean, people are ready to buy candy like crazy, and I'm cutting my lights off so nobody will knock on the door, and then I'm going to hide outside in case somebody egg my car because I don't have any candy, and I'm going to squirt them with a water gun.
I thought you were going to say you were going to buy all the candy and turn your lights off and eat the candy by yourself.
Oh, no, I'm going to do that a day before.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing that a day before. I'm just going to eat all the candy I can eat. I mean, I'm going to get a cavity mouthful. Believe that.
That's funny. Yeah, you'll watch, everybody watch your kids brush your teeth at night so they don't get cavities.
Let me ask you this, though, with trick-or-treating, is there any particular candies? Because every year we have this thing where we got to watch out for, it was candy apples when I was a kid. It was, you know, I don't know, fruit or whatever. Is there something that parents should be looking out for, you know, those who celebrate, you know, Halloween or who participate? Is there anything that they should, you know, just stay away from, just throw it away when they see it in the kids' bags?
I honestly haven't heard of anything in a really long time. Like you said, it was, you know, the candy apples and stuff. But we just always go through our kids' candy and make sure none of the packages looks like they've been tampered with. If it's halfway open, we go ahead and throw it away just because you don't ever know. Anything that may have been homemade, you know, some neighborhood families make, or you'll have older couples who make things and put it in their bag. We just don't let our kids have any of that stuff just because you never know. So just being more cautious, I think, is probably the best rule of thumb to live by. But we don't live where we live. It's more rural. We don't live in a heavily populated area. I mean, there's just a few houses that we take our kids to that we know the people. So, you know, just maybe being more cautious like that, taking kids to a safe place that you're familiar with is, you know, really good. You know, rule of thumb. Because, you know, if something happens, you're like, okay, well, I went to these houses, so I know people, you can go back and get them.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You know, go where you're safe and try to go out as early as possible.
Don't let your kids run out by themselves in the neighborhood. You know.
Yeah, it ain't 82. No. It ain't 1982 anymore, man. When I was, it was all access. We were out of there. By the time we were so excited about Halloween, we would wear our costumes to school. Like under our clothes.
Yeah.
So when we get home, we just ran through the door. You did homework if you had some, then you just stripped. Like, then before you know it, you got your Halloween costume on. You back out the door, trick or treating, right next door, all up the street. And, you know, it was a beautiful thing, man. Times were different and people seemed to be more caring and friendly, you know. So I don't know. I thought it was a great thing back then. Now I'm just not so excited about it anymore. We really just don't even participate. But hey, whatever floats your boat, folks, be safe out there. Charlotte, any shout outs? It is 8:30.
I don't really have a shout out, but
what?
I was going to say today we went to see the Carolina Balloon Festival with the hot air balloons. That was really a cool sight to see. So anybody is ever in Statesville, North Carolina during this time of the year, it's definitely worth a trip if you live nearby. But
you actually rode in a hot air balloon today?
No, we were right there where they took off. They, like, went right over our heads. It was really awesome.
In. You should have jumped in.
I wanted to.
Yeah, next time. Next time. We're going
to
jump in.
That's something I've always wanted to do.
We're going to see if we can't make that happen for Charlotte, man. She wants to ride in the hot air balloon. Somebody out there hit me up.
Out there?
I know somebody got a hot air balloon.
I will write an awesome review.
See, there it is. 619-638-8559. You know her from stretchingyourbudget.com. The triad super saver herself. Charlotte is always holding us down, always showing love. And what she does, folks, she does it for you. She do it for you. Excuse me. So we love you, Charlotte. We appreciate all you do, man. We are supporters. We are fans. And, you know, have a beautiful week. And shout out to you and your family. Thanks for coming on and doing this segment for us every single week. I appreciate it.
Thank you. No problem.
So, folks, it is 8:30 on the hour. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to bring on this very special individual. You know, it's when you look at politics and when you look at the scope of politics, to be a black person in America, I can't sugarcoat it. Just keep it real pudgy, man. I just got to call it, you know, the way I see it. To be a black person in support of someone like Mitt Romney, you know, being a Republican nominee, because let's face it, you know, I could sit here and say that, you know, that doesn't happen as often. But if you flip the tables and follow what I'm saying now, if you turn the tables, there are traditionally thousands of black people out there. I'm going to say millions of black people out there who support the Republican Party, no matter who the candidate is. No matter about the candidate, It's just about the party. And I could also turn the tables back again and say there are millions of white folks out there who support the Republican Party just because of the party and not the candidate. But when you get someone, let's look at what just happened in these past couple weeks. When you get someone like a Stacey Dash who comes out. Now, I don't know. If you ask me, I'm going to keep it 100. I got to keep it 100 now. I don't know. Shout out to Stacey Dash. I love her older movies. You know, shout out to a very gorgeous woman. Was my dream girl at one point. I'm pretty sure I had on the wall and kissed her every day. But it's like this right here. I don't know if it's a publicity stunt for her or not. I don't know. I think that maybe if I was an agent and I saw the attention that Nicki Minaj got, pop star Nicki Minaj, I would probably ask my – I would tell my client that, hey, who do you support? I would ask him, who do you support? You know, who do you support in this campaign? This is one of the biggest campaigns in history. Okay, this is one of the biggest re-election campaigns in history. So if you came out in support of the other guy, whether you support him or not, if you came out in support of the opposition, do you know how much attention you'd get? But you got to be prepared for the negative attention because you get more negative than positive. And when I look at things like this, I don't know if it's a publicity stunt, but I will say this. When black people support the Republican Party or Republican candidate, the game is over. I mean, roll the sidewalks up, cut the lights off, shut the door, lock them, because everybody's going to go in on that person. Everybody's going to all of a sudden say that you're a traitor. Well, you know what? Let's bring an expert in on this. The man Kevin Williams, director, writer, editor of the movie Fear of a Black Republican. Kevin, welcome to the show, my good friend. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Man, it is a pleasure. You know, it's a pleasure to have you on this. And I just watched the movie, some last night, the rest today. And Nicole asked me, how did I feel about the movie? I don't know if someone asked her, but, you know, I told her how I felt about the movie. And, you know, she raised her eyebrows at me. She was like, wow, you know, I never thought about it like that. I guess she hadn't seen it because we went into deep detail about it, okay? So she was saying some things. Well, really, I never really thought about it the way you put it. And the only thing I said is that, if you take black people, jumping right into this, I'm sorry, Kevin. If you take black people who support the Republican Party and you take white people who support the Democratic Party, all of a sudden the earth shatters, the earth shakes, and people look at you like, what's wrong with you? What is it about a racial identity that makes up a party that's contrary to a party?
It's kind of a fascinating thing. If I you know, get a little long, just kick me in the leg.
Sure.
But I guess coming from my background, I'm the youngest of seven. My mom, a good Irish Catholic. My dad, German Catholic. And I always heard stories of my older brothers talking about what it was like when Kennedy ran back in '60, because there hadn't been a Catholic president before, and he was of Irish descent, mm-hmm. and the whole deal. And there's a lot of pressure on people. Particularly in the Northeast and the cities, if you're Irish and Catholic, you had to vote for Kennedy. But by the time I came up, that really didn't exist. It had already passed, etc. But one of the things growing up in the urban city that's dominated African-American population-wise and Democratic Party-wise is seeing how culturally ingrained that you must be, if you're black, you must be Democrat, and only white people are Republicans.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, my older brothers can tell me stories. It is not the same as what it is like to be an African American who wants to be a Republican. It's nowhere near that. And it's one of those things where demographically, ethnically, it's just, it's a sad thing I found over time, but it's just an amazing process to see where automatically, and I asked this of Professor Taylor in the film, what would be worse to be called in the African-American community, a Republican or the N-word? And being a great intellectual as he is, he's a professor at Princeton, mm-hmm. He actually broke it down and explained it and got to the level, well, it would be worse in the black community to be called a Dixiecrat, to be a black Republican rather than a Dixiecrat. So on the food chain, a Dixiecrat is at a higher level than the Black Republicans in many folks' ideas, which was utterly and in many ways shocking. Because if you say racism, you say Ku Klux Klan, you say what happened Jim Crow laws, I'm thinking, you know, George Wallace, I'm thinking Bull Connor, I'm thinking Governor Faubus, all these figures in history who were, you know, complete racist, but they were all from the Democratic Party. But on our culture, particularly and for Black culture, the Republican Party has that tag, where the Republican Party is the one where people raise their eyebrows, temperatures can get raised, arguments can get started. And I've seen it, fortunately, when we've done our screenings around the country, we haven't had any major problems, but there have been some moments where someone who's Black and a Democrat will get up into someone's face who's a Black and a Republican. It's just, it's kind of a very interesting dynamic when you also watch maybe white audience members who've never seen this before because they live in the suburbs, or maybe they vote for the eye of the party, have never, you know, had to interact with someone who disagrees with their political views.
Man,
and I'm sorry, I made a movie for 6.5 years. I could be with you for 2 days talking.
You know what? We're gonna spend all night on this topic, but let me rewind a second, just for people who just started listening to the show. Shout out to my folks on the West Coast who probably just joined us as well. Listen, what inspired you to do a movie like Fear of a Black Republican? I mean, what made you do this, by the way?
Well, that's a great deep question. A lot of things, Pudgy. But if I broke it down, it was just the idea of I grew up in a city that we're not on the upside. It's actually gotten worse since we even started making the film. But I wanted to find out why my own party, I'm a Republican, we tell everyone at the beginning of the film, wasn't involved in urban areas such as where I live, and why the Democratic Party had such free reign. And specifically, I heard you speaking earlier about going to the state legislature, going to city council meetings, and that's what we did when my wife and I got married in 2000. We bought a house. We got civically active. Before we had kids, we really tried to go to as many city council meetings, learn who all the players were, know all 7 members of the city council. We knew our mayor on a first-name basis. And as years went by and we were fixing up our house, it just wasn't getting any better. We had more crime. We had the Bloods moved into our neighborhood. We had different things where businesses, they'd announced that they were going to build this brand new factory or that something was going to go up, and it just never went up. And no people were hired, and you could just see on the streets that folks were, their times were getting tougher for them. And what put it all together was 2004, the election between President Bush and Senator Curry, it was very tight here in New Jersey after 9/11. And at that point, about a week and a half or so before the election, Bush was down about 7 points. So Maxine Waters, who is a congresswoman out in L.A., and I knew from following politics, I'm a bit of a junkie, that she was kind of a firebrand, and she'd probably have some interesting things to say, no matter what. And some Democrat friends of mine, one of whom's now in city council, Zach Chester, got permission for me to go shoot the event because it was a get-out-the-vote event for the congressman who's a Democrat in our district. And when I went there, and you see this in our trailer at fearofablackrepublican.com, it was one thing for my mayor to get up, and he really spoke to the crowd. It was a heavily African-American crowd to make sure that they showed up for Election Day and the night before to knock on doors. But when Maxine Waters got up, she specifically attacked the Bush administration. I expected that. But when she said, we have to get rid of this crowd, this whole bunch, and guess what? That goes for Colin Powell and for sure Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
And I just panned the camera, and you see the audience just going crazy, like, you know, Philadelphia Eagles just won the Super Bowl. That's my team. And it was just amazing to see because, okay, yeah, I'm white. Yeah, I'm a Republican. And quite frankly, amongst Republicans, a lot of folks sit there scratching, how did the Democrats do it? How did they keep the African-American community voting Democrat? And I think I saw part of it that night. And it just hit me like a thunderbolt when she spoke to that. Now, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, you may not like their policies, but these are very accomplished people.
Mm-hmm.
And for the crowd to react to that, it really said to me, okay, there's a lot more going on here than just Democrat, Republican. There's a cultural thing. There's a racial angle to this that a lot of people aren't getting outside of probably the African-American community or if you live in an urban area. And consequently, a couple of days later, I'm a filmmaker. We always approach the movie filmmaker first. But I did try to go get door hangers for President Bush to put up in my own neighborhood, and we showed this in the film. And I was immediately like, well, we're not putting anything up in Trenton. And I'm like, well, why not? I live there. And the gentleman said, we don't want to rile up the voters in the city, because if they come out in force, that will hurt us in the suburbs and the statewide elections. So that right there, boom, Maxine Waters, boom, I can't get door hangers, because assuming they're afraid a lot of black Democrats are going to come out and vote in numbers that would hurt the suburban, i.e. white Republicans, running for election.
Wow.
And that's really what spurred us on. I mean, shooting in the snow in Wisconsin in January, I almost got frostbite. To travel in the country, went down to New Orleans twice, the Ninth Ward, traveled to follow Catherine Davis, who's in the film. She runs for Congress. And that really, I really have to think. I mean, I would say I think God inspired us to make this film in some ways that we don't know about. If I could just mention that, because for us to make a film for 6.5 years, you have to have a lot of determination.
Yes,
but
sir.
Also, you have to have a belief, particularly with an independent film, that you're doing something maybe no one else can touch, but more importantly, something that needs your personal feeling to it.
6 years in making that film, that's amazing, my brother. I mean, you talk about, and let me just tell you for a second, we are a pro-Christ show. I don't care who doesn't like it. I don't care who doesn't listen. I don't care who has a beef with it. This is what we do. This is what we believe. So if you have any reserve in saying, you know, God inspires to do anything, brother, you can throw that reserve in the garbage. Because you can definitely do that on this show, and that's what we do. So, hey, man, without God, we definitely wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have the mindset that we have to be able to speak about the truth and things the way we see it, not catering to any party, just speaking on the truth in the way that we see it, reading history, and understanding the legislation that presents for us before us. So, you know, there's no reserve in speaking about God on this show, man. This is what we do. But, you know, going back to you guys shooting this, because – looking at the movie, you got some heavy hitters on this movie, man. You got some people who that wouldn't normally speak on a topic, if you will, from what I've gathered. And you know, they were really straightforward. I look at Michael Steele and some things that he said on the show, and I really loved that segment because, you know, what he had to say I thought was Johnny on the spot. And I know I'm going to skip a little bit and go back and forth in this movie.
No worries. I'd love it because I don't get asked these questions most often.
Okay, great, man. Because I want people to see this movie. And what we want to try to do at KRP, we're going to try to set up a screening somewhere. We got to find out what it takes, how much it costs, and we'll try to get those funds together through donations, and we'll try to make it happen. I think a lot of people definitely need to see this because it's so middle of the road. I mean, this film really captures the essence of the things that I talk about on this show all the time. And the ultimate question is, you know, does the Republican Party really want more black Democrats? And I often wonder that myself because, you know, you reach out to different people. And by the way, I think there's another question and probably another movie that's out there. I'd love to help you make the movie and ask this question. Seriously, I want people to think about it. Does the Democratic Party, and I got my beef with them, man, because I look at the neighborhoods that I grew up in. But the question is, does the Democratic Party really want more informed black Democrats? I think that's another question. Because, you know,
sure,
when you start dealing with these political individuals, or what I like to refer to them as is celebrities, when you start dealing with them and you know that and you understand the legislation and the things that they've done in the past and the relationships that they have, that they don't have to have, by the way, they look at you like you're weird. They don't really want to talk to you. They will because they have to, especially in a crowd. But if you call them, they'll push you off. You know, if you catch them in a moment when it's just you and them in a room, you know, they'll brush you off again. They'll try to walk past you. They'll ignore you until you give up. And they're very good at ignoring because they normally have a staff that just says, hey, Mr. Congressman's busy, he'll get back with you, or such and such is busy, they'll get back with you. And this is what I've seen on the Democratic side, because I have tried to reach out to these folks. I have dealt with a bunch of different NAAC people across the country. And what it seems like is if you're not prepared to take orders, with all the respect to these guys, if you're not prepared to take orders, they don't want to deal with you. And looking at your movie, that's what I saw from what you faced in Trenton. You know, when you got involved in Trenton, it was almost like, hey, if you're not here to serve and you're not here to take orders, we really don't want to deal with you.
No, and that's truthfully what it was. And some folks, you almost had that attitude of, well, how dare you actually ask a question? And it was just amazing over time how many people we've met around the country, not just, you know, when we were here. And even in Arizona, Tucson, we did a screening there. Lady didn't know that she had the right to go to her city council meeting and that there's a public speaking portion where you can stand there as a citizen and lay your concerns and tell your city council, look, you're not doing a good job doing this, or the police didn't show up when we called them about this situation, or traffic, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we found when making the movie, we got a lot of people, God bless them, you know, Senator and then becoming President Obama, before he really got going in late 2007, early 2008, and started defeating, you know, Hillary Clinton and her campaign, I think we got a lot of people who wouldn't have said the same thing after he got rolling, because they would have been afraid to be put on YouTube, or they would have been afraid to have their comments taken out of context.
Oh yeah.
And that's where I say, like, you know, God bless the Lord, because if it didn't take us that long to make the film, we wouldn't have gotten, you know, a Cornel West, the beautiful answer he says right in the beginning of the film, or Michael Steele and what he says, or even Mike Huckabee, what he says when he was running for president before anybody knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was still, at that point, flying around the country with his daughter. She was his campaign manager. So
yep.
Wow. And it's one of the things I would like to, I know you're very much about positivity and trying to get people to achieve their dreams. One of the things, we just did it by hook or by crook. We went to book signings. That's how I got Governor Whitman, my governor. She did a book signing nearby and just introduced myself and said, hey, this is what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And she said, well, contact my assistant. I emailed the assistant and I laid out, I didn't tell him exactly the questions I would ask, but I told him the subject bears. And she was another person I thought was great and beautifully honest in it. Tavis Smiley. We got him for the movie before he became a huge deal, and I'll give him a lot of credit because we booked that interview about 3 months before Hurricane Katrina happened, and the interview was supposed to happen about 2.5 weeks after, and he could have canceled on us because he had the big PBS telethon that night in New York City, and he didn't cancel. And I got to spend about a half hour with him, and you saw how much of him's in the film. That tells you how good he was in his answers.
Oh yeah, I love Tavis because Tavis gives you a brutal honesty majority of the time, whether you agree with him or not. I think he's speaking from his heart, and I don't think that there's an agenda there. I think really Tavis speaks from his heart and what he believes based on what he's seen. You know, so people like that I love to work with. You know, I don't care about your party lines, but I love to work with people who are driven by just the pure of their heart, just the love that's in their heart and the love that they have for other folks. I think we need more of that, man. And that's why I believe that, you know, we got to do something in this country to get more common people. And when I say common, I mean more working people, more people that have more in common like each other, like we do, than, you know, people who sit on this plateau and feel like they're more holy than thou, or, you know, they're some kind of special person just because they're running for a political office to actually serve the people. And you know, there are all those personalities out there. But so I think we need more common people, more people that are more, that have more in common with you and myself than, you know, those type of attitudes, if you will.
Very much so, and that's what the founding fathers and mothers wanted when they founded the country. They didn't want,
absolutely,
I mean, nothing against lawyers, but do we really need to have 300 lawyers out of 435 members of the House?
No.
Or how many people are millionaires, both parties? That's not what was originally intended, and that's, I think that's why in many ways we're getting the government we have nowadays.
Yeah. You spoke on Hurricane Katrina. And you know, I did listen to what Tavis had to say in the movie, and I also listened to what former Republican Chair Michael Steele had to say. And I thought Michael Steele was Johnny on the spot, too. But he said something that stuck out in my head, and I just want to ask you, you know, about Hurricane Katrina. Where exactly were you? You know, what was going on with you guys? Because I think, were you guys shooting a movie at that time as well?
No, actually, I was in Trenton screaming at my television set.
Oh, man.
A lot, because I lived in New Orleans. I actually, when I went to grad school, Tulane, and I went through Hurricane Andrew, and all I had was a bicycle and a streetcar, and the streetcar was not going to get me out of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, my landlord, this is about 8 or 7 months or so before it happened, he said, Kev, I know you don't have a car. Get a hatchet from the hardware store down the street. If you chop through the roof. If anything gets bad, go to the dome. And that's 1992.
Damn.
So everybody knew. You knew from jump. You moved to New Orleans. You were renting. You go to the dome.
Yeah.
And just watch what's on television. I know intellectually. I know legislatively. You know, there's this concept in our constitution or legal form of government called posse comitatus, where the president of the United States, the federal government, cannot go into a state without the written request of that governor. And there's all
right.
this mess between Mayor Nagin, Governor Blanco, and President Bush. And hopefully somebody will do something about that, because I would have to think we'll be facing that once again sometime in the future. But what Michael Steele said in the film is what many people felt, particularly folks who live in urban areas who are Republican, which is, yeah, Bush should have landed in Air Force One, taken a helicopter. And when I watch that scene, it brings me back. I get a chill down my spine. I've seen that scene probably 2,000 times from editing and everything. And it was just one of those moments where you just knew when it didn't happen. And Karl Rove is the one, I found this out in our research later on, Karl Rove is the one who advised him against doing it because he thought it would look like grandstanding. And when he did that, you just knew, boom, that was a huge lost opportunity. All those minor gains, the progress that was getting made towards bringing the Republican Party back towards the cities, back to the African-American community, that just went up in smoke.
Wow. 619.
And actually, it should have.
Well, 619-638-8559, you're on the KRP radio show, on with our favorite black Republican producer, Kevin Williams, on Chopping It Up with me, at NC Pudgy on Twitter, at KIRP Radio Show, at Fear of a Black REP. Check them out on Twitter. Did I get your tag right just now?
Yep, that's right, Fear of a Black REP. And then our website's fearofablackrepublican.com. And we're also on Facebook, but I'll be honest, I'm having a lot more fun on Twitter. That's how you and I have been really communicating. Twitter's
yeah.
a great thing.
I think we met. I thought we met a few times. I know we met in D.C., if not once, but twice. But if not twice, we definitely met once. And I think it was at CPAC.
Pretty sure it was, actually.
Okay. Well, I know for a fact we met at CPAC because I had your poster in the studio here. But I just want to ask you, well, before I move on to the CPAC, I just want to ask you one more thing about Hurricane Katrina. What do you think, or how do you think President Bush would have been looked at by black folks in the country had he touched the ground in New Orleans during the hurricane?
Well, first of all, I'd have to say that, I mean, this is the point of view of someone who's white, but does know a heck of a lot of African Americans, has definitely talked to a heck of a lot of them since Katrina. I think if he would have done that, it would have really gotten a lot of people to look back and say, you know, maybe these Republicans aren't what I heard about. Maybe some of them are, but not all of them. And maybe I'll get this guy who wants to run for city council that everybody laughs at the barbershop. Maybe I'll give him a serious listen. Or maybe I might consider voting for the next Republican who comes down running for president. Or at least hear what they have to say without the view maybe I was brought up with, or maybe the only view I got, which is what the Democrats have told me or what the media tells me. And when he didn't do that and just show the great sympathy, which I believe he did have in his heart, and I think he wanted to do it, and I know from reading his autobiography he did want to go to New Orleans, but unfortunately he listened to his advisors,
mm-hmm.
that I think that would have changed, like Michael still talks about in the film, it would have changed basically a lot of what the imprimatur, he uses a very good Latin word, which I had to look up in the dictionary, but I didn't know what that meant. Very smart guy, Mr. Steele. I think it would have changed a lot of things. It wouldn't have gotten millions of African Americans to vote Republican overnight, but I think it would have really opened up the dialogue a lot. Instead, it had the exact opposite result.
Looking at the political landscape of just of America in general, does the Republican Party, does the country need the Republican Party to have more black Republicans, in your opinion?
Yes, I think so. I think to have what Senator Brooks says in the beginning of the film, we need to have a viable two-party system, particularly in urban areas where you have a greater percentage of our population is moving to, and the cities are growing to what they're calling now ex-urban areas, where the cities have grown into the suburbs. And if we don't have more black Republicans, which would mean the Democratic Party starts losing its automatic power base in the black community and in urban areas, and that would force them to all of a sudden have to really start showing some results. And then on the Republican side, they would have to change a good bit of their agenda in not being such a suburban-focused party, and have to really get involved with things like, okay, crime, or get involved with things such as the school systems beyond, okay, let's just have school vouchers and school choice, which are great things in my opinion, and I think these are necessary things. But you have to have the Republican Party look at also, okay, well, when someone gets released from prison, recidivism programs, what are we going to do about that? Drug addiction programs. How draconian do we want things like in New York, they have the Rockefeller drug laws, whether those really are effective. There's a lot of issues that affect urban areas because folks are so concentrated in a low amount of square miles. Like where I live, we have 84,000 people in 7.5 square miles. This year we're up to over this past weekend, I think, we have 18 murders in our city.
Wow.
Now, if cities aren't the perfect bad laboratory of a lack of opportunity, a lack of jobs, crime, and all the other ills that we're supposed to be improving as a society, how long is it going to be till the suburbs start feeling the effects? And they already are beginning. I mean, they have meth problems. They have crime problems. They're not on the levels that we see in our cities. But over time, one of the things I try to appeal to suburbanites, particularly if they come to the screenings, or trying to, when I do interviews, and I know I'm speaking to a more suburban audience or a more Republican audience, and I just say, you folks are paying a lot of money in property taxes, and a lot of that money is going to help with certain problems that we have in urban areas with lack of jobs or services or with law enforcement. You're paying for that. How many years do you want to be paying for that and getting the same terrible results? If you want to fix the problems, you can't just simply, if you work in the city, drive in at 8 a.m. and then leave at 5 p.m. You have to get more involved beyond that. And further, you have to push your legislators to start really trying to solve the problems as hard as we are. And let them know, yeah, folks in the suburbs want to make the cities better places, and not for just an esoteric reason of, oh, you know, make me feel better, kumbaya, help those poor people. No, it's helping yourself because you're helping your fellow citizen. And by helping your fellow citizen, we're making a better country.
Sure.
And more than a fair number of people, I think they get that. But I think the problem where we've gotten, and this is on a racial basis as well as you were mentioning earlier, the party basis, it's very difficult, particularly with the self-segmenting we have of our media. Ooh, I only watch Fox. I never watch MSNBC or the other ones, or I don't read this paper. And on the left, ooh, I would never watch Fox, or I would never read that paper or this online site. People need to start really getting both points of view or two sides of the story, if not three sides of the story, because if you're not, it's real easy, particularly in the online world, to only keep getting the same news from the same people, and even
sure.
Social media. How many attaboys do you need to get or retweets before you say, well, hold on, am I really thinking the right way on this issue? Have I challenged my thoughts?
Wow.
And, you know, if I could just add this to one of the things we've noticed in trying, you know, making the film, getting it out there, talking to a lot of the great folks we've been blessed to talk with that are in our film, is if you really look closely, and I'd just like to encourage folks, maybe just for a couple of nights if you happen to watch the cable news, how many of these guests or these consultants they have on or contributors are conveniently hawking a book, or they got this film coming out, or this new TV show, whatever it might be. I hate to say it, it's a very incestuous business, and they use the same people all the time. So,
well, man, you just – I'll tell you what. I'm gonna make this comment, and then we're gonna bring on. Looks like we got Catherine Davis here. She's gonna join us in just a sec.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
We're not gonna do our 9 p.m. commercial. We'll get to that towards the end of the show, maybe the bonus hour. But for folks who just joined in, especially my West Coast listeners, you listen to the KRP Radio Show. Special guest Catherine Davis, and right now on the air with me, Fear of a Black Republicans producer and editor. And I want to say writer and just the whole thing for that movie, Kevin Williams, producer Kevin Williams. You know, you, jack of all trades for the movie anyway. Check us out on Twitter at symbol KIRP Radio Show, KIRPRadioShow.com. We're also on iTunes where we got some great numbers on that, man. We're doing very well on there. 619-638-8559. Hit 1 if you got a comment. We'll try to get you in the queue as soon as possible. No, we got 2 guests, so just hang tight with us, folks. We will have a bonus hour tonight. Let me say this, my brother. Let's bring on Catherine first, because I get long-winded. Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing
hey,
wonderful.
Hey, Catherine.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Good. How have you been?
I'm wonderful. I've been sitting here listening to y'all and yelling and screaming at you. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah. I know you. I know you were.
Well, you made our film, ma'am. You made our film.
You know what? It's beautiful to have you on, Catherine, and I'm a huge fan of yours, as you know. I mean, supporter, friend, brother, everything. You know it. I'm always in your corner any way to help. And for you folks who don't know that, I am. So I'm all in that boat. I know Catherine's heart and her intentions are absolutely pro-Christ, and I love that. And I'm definitely in her corner as she go through a lot of these fights that she starts. She don't start them, but she definitely finishes them. And you know, if you guys follow Catherine Davis, you're following a good person. And, you know, she's putting out some good information for some of you all out there, whether you want to hear it or not. Catherine, I was just in the middle of about to make this comment about CPAC. You know, Kevin had mentioned that there's a lot of people on these anchor folks that are on these news shows, the CNNs, the Foxes, all of them. And they always have it seems that they have a hidden agenda. Well, you know, that's the problem I had at CPAC. I found myself in the room with what were labeled as some of the black conservatives in the country, if not in the world. And I had an issue with all of the language in that room. You know, there were people talking about what they have done, and I honor that. Thanks to you guys who have done so much. You guys are the reason that I'm here today and that I feel inspired enough to continue on what you are still doing and, you know, through some of the works that you have done. But my issues with that is that we can all gather. We can write our checks and fly to CPAC. We can drive and gas our cars and trucks up. We can pay for these overpriced hotels and some of these overpriced breakout sessions. And we come and we look and smell good. We go out to eat and we drink the best wines and the food and whatever. We can all do that together. But as soon as one of us, any one of us in that room, asks to meet somewhere other than where all the news cameras are going to be, because we need support in this community. If you look at Chicago right now, to me now, and I got my criticisms for the president because that's his hood, as I like to say, but I got my criticisms with everybody else too, because we should be pulling together in Chicago. I don't care if it's marching, singing a song, meeting with somebody, whatever we got to do. Those are the things that we should be inspiring and getting together to do, not getting going together in CPAC, where these are all the people who are active and talking about the books that I got coming up and the movies that I'm going to be in and this, that, and the third. I'm sick of hearing that. I don't mind buying folks books. You know, I'm a capitalist. I want people to do well, and I hope people continue to do well. Write your books. Sing your songs. Make your songs. Whatever you got to do. Do your websites. Do your movies. But when it comes to being active, it always seems like it's an individual effort, and I can't stand it because let's be frank here. Let's be real frank. I don't know one black conservative in this country that can gather 500 to 1,000 black conservatives in the room without a suit and tie on in a call to action to actually go out and do some work. I don't know one because I haven't seen it. And if I'm lying, please prove me wrong. Catherine, what do you think about all that? I know I said a lot.
Well, I know a couple of black conservatives that can call 1,000 people in the room, conservatives, to action. And you do too, Pudgy. We just haven't done it. But you know them, like Tim Johnson and Dean Nelson and Troy Rollins and some of those folks. But anyway, Can I back up for 1 second to
Please.
The Hurricane Katrina thing? Why is it that only the Republican president is expected to respond in a certain way when we have a disaster and not the Democrat president? And that's the problem I have with that analysis that just occurred about, yes, President Bush should have touched down in New Orleans, and he was trying to be careful because Republicans get so demonized. They're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't. So either way, I mean, he was going to be damned. Unfortunately, he chose the wrong one to be damned over, but he was going to be damned. And I'm not trying to promote President Bush. I'm just saying that there is something of a double standard when it comes to those kind of things, and we feed into this separatist notion of black Democrats and Republicans needing to do something more to get them. That's not what's going to win them, because Republicans have been demonized for too long. Secondly, because they have been demonized, I don't think there's ever going to be a time when we are going to recruit large numbers of blacks to be Republican. And I think that's the wrong thing to do anyway, because it's because of these party delineations that we are so divided today. But what about in America where blacks and whites, without regard to party, come together and elect people who are going to represent our interests? They could be Republican, they could be Democrat, but this party allegiance has been used to drive a chasm between blacks and whites today.
Amen.
That, quite frankly, is not going to be bridged by recruiting blacks to become Republican, because you have many Republicans who put on the uniform of Republicanism, but they're just as racist and just as Democrat in their ideology as the Democrats who are on the other side, and vice versa. So I from an activist point of view, you have to give people something to be activated for. And CPAC is not a organization to activate anything. CPAC is where you go to be seen and sell your books and rub shoulders and hobnob with the political elite. But it is not the group that's going to come together and cause the revolution in this country. So
you know,
I just had to get that off my chest.
I definitely agree. And my whole issue with that was that we were – that room, or those folks in that room, were – that was sort of a call to action on what we were to do, if you will. And, you know, I didn't get any instruction from there. I didn't even get any morale from that. It was just, hey, you know, we've been doing good by my book. We've been doing good by my book. But, you know, I go back with all due respect to Tim and Dean and all those other folks out there that I know, and Troy, and, you know, all the other beautiful leaders out there in the conservative movement, the Christ conservative movement, as I like to clarify, the common sense conservative movement. I like to say, you know, with all due respect to those guys, I think my numbers were a little bit low. When I said 1,000, you know, I meant more higher numbers. But and it's not really all about that. It's just, it seems that, you know, these guys are out here working. Captain, you're out here working. Kevin, you're out here working. I'm working. And we're working for people who it seems like could care less about what we believe in. When in truth.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I've been at 2 CPACs since when you see in the film.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was amazing to me is it hasn't changed. Like when I met Catherine for the first time, we were part of a group with the National Black Republican Association. And just seeing what Catherine went through being a congressional candidate and just observing, and granted I'm running around with a camera and God bless her for putting up with me, but to see all the same things, this person trying to make sure that they are talking to someone more important than you at all times, people lining up to try to talk to the chairman, who didn't take any questions when we were at the event, didn't want to interface with any of the activists, And you can see there's a huge difference between the people in the cheap seats, shall I say, your activists, and the folks who are doing all the talking from the stages, and also from the folks who are getting that access and getting a chance and getting commitments of real time in coming to their community, or just giving them a little bit of money and resources, or at least, hey, I'll write you a letter of support. And you just didn't see that going on. And one of the things, if I could say this, it was across the board. No matter what you looked like or where you necessarily came from, it was a matter of, unless you could help me advance my career, you're not worth my time. And that's the worst part of all of it.
That's true on both sides of the aisle. That's not just a Republican phenomenon.
It's a political
party phenomenon, which goes back to my point. And, Kevin, I think we saw this repeatedly, even when we were going around in my district. And I'll never forget that clip that you put in, Kevin, when the governor or the candidate to be the governor of Georgia called all of the Republican candidates up to be recognized and did not call my name. And it was not because he didn't know me. It was because I didn't fit the political model that they were attempting to promote and to elevate. And so, you know, even though I was there, he did not call me up. Now, when he left, the party chair of that county did call me up. But by then, the media was gone. You know, most of the people were milling about and leaving, kind of thing. But again, I think that in this day and age, we cannot expect these political parties to fulfill the desires that we have, because they have proven time and time again they're not interested. They're not interested in going into Trenton where Kevin lives, or coming over here in Stone Mountain where I live. They are more interested in promoting their political agenda, and the rest of you, you know, forget you.
Yeah.
Because you don't have power and you don't have the money, and that's what they're all clamoring for.
Kevin, Fear of a Black Republican, I did see the segment. Well, I saw the whole movie, but I did see the segment with Catherine, and when she distinctly said, "I'm not getting the support of the Republican Party National." Where's the disconnect with the national parties, either side, the national parties and actual congressional candidates? Because that's amazing to me. We're not talking about, with all due respect to city council members, we're not talking about city council members. We're talking about someone who's running for Congress within your party. How do you not support people who are congressional candidates for your party? Catherine, maybe you can better answer that.
You can take it, Catherine.
It's called the Southern Strategy.
Oh, God.
Because the fear is that if the black vote comes out, Kevin mentioned it earlier, it's going to hurt the upticket. And so what they do is say, yes, we want you, Catherine, you're wonderful, you're great, look at this, we have this black Republican, but they're not going to say it loudly, they're not going to say it publicly, and they certainly are not going to put their money behind it, because in a district like the one that I live in, it could sway a statewide election in one direction or the other. And so they don't want all these black voters coming out there and voting for any candidate. I mean, I could have been white for that matter. In this particular district, they're not going to support me. And I think that's what Kevin faced in Trenton. They told him really clearly, we're not going to put stuff out in Trenton because why? They didn't say they didn't want all those black voters to come out, but they might as well have, because Kevin is an anomaly living in Trenton.
Frankly,
He's not the norm, you know? So, and again, that's why it becomes critical. We have to be wise as serpents but harmless as doves. And I think our mistakes, if you will, have been to try to persuade a group of people who over a 40-year period of time have been told that all Republicans are one sheet short of the KKK, tried to now turn around and say, we want to be your friend. Well, you know, they have 40 years of hearing that they're going to turn back the clock, y'all. They're going to turn back the clock.
Yeah.
Now, praise God, I'm not the kind of candidate they call the Oreo or Uncle Tom or any of the things that happened with Michael Steele. You know, they threw cookies at that brother.
Yeah, man.
And I think it's more because of my assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you throw a cookie at me, I'm going to pick it up and throw it back.
I know that's right. Seriously.
Seriously. But you know, I'm not so naive as to believe that I can go out here in DeKalb County, Georgia, in Rockdale County, Georgia, and tell black people to vote Republican. What I can do is exactly what I did. And Kevin can tell you that campaign that he filmed, if we went back and look at my numbers, most of the votes that I got that year came out of the black community.
Wow. Sure did.
Not from my Republican friends. Black Democrats voted for me.
Right. Wow.
And when
we were sign-waving, you know the scene where Kevin shows the cars going by and they're honking their horn at me?
Yeah.
We were in the heart of the hood, you know what I mean? And people recognized me, they knew me, and they were willing to throw their support to me. At that point, my Republican brethren deserted me. So my votes came from the black vote. And it's proven that if we go and ask for the vote and let them see you, and that's what made Huckabee such a great candidate for president, is because he didn't care about going into the hood and asking black folk for their vote. And when he did it in Arkansas, he got a huge, significant number of black votes that no other Republican has seen in recent history.
40%.
Wow, I love it.
40%.
Well, I mean, here we are, folks, in an election year, in what I feel like is one of the most important election years ever to me. I know 2008 was, they say, monumental, but I think this one is just that much more special. And, you know, we have a Mitt Romney and we have a President Obama, and, you know, they're going head to head. And, you know, what I've been seeing is people going at each other's throat. I mean, family and friends over the social media, you name it, Twitter, Facebook, all this stuff. I mean, blogs, people are actually going in on each other. And what I've seen from my community of folks is that if you support Mitt Romney, I disown you almost, or I can't deal with you, or I can't speak to you, or, you know, you're a traitor. You know, I saw a traitor a lot in the movie. You're a traitor, or sometimes you're not connected, or you don't understand. You know, how important is this election this year compared to where we were in 2008? Whoever can take that.
I'd say, I think you have it right, that it's more important. 2008, that was a tidal wave election. The Republican Party could have genetically re-engineered George Washington, John McCain, Jackie Robinson, whoever they wanted to put in, and yeah. I don't think it would have made a difference. They just had, one of the things I will always say, and I tell as many folks, particularly on my side of the aisle, this, they worked hard. When he announced that he was running for president in January 2007, within 2 weeks, at least in New Jersey, they had already, his campaign, mapped out most of Newark, Trenton, Camden, Atlantic City, and some of the other urban areas. And I'd heard that they did very well in Philadelphia by February. So they had already did all the land work. They digitized it. They computerized it way more than the Republican Party and faster than they did in adapting from 2004. In 2004, the Republicans were the gold standard as far as campaign organization. So that campaign, they did a great job. Mm-hmm. But 4 years later, after we've had a momentous moment, the first African-American president, and all the great imagery with that, symbology, but also in a lot of truth. Yeah, there's a lot of families out there. They'd love to have their kids to be able to watch the television and say, you can do that. You can be president of the United States, male and female. But I think from this point, this is a very important election because people, I think, and I'm hoping, will decide who they're voting for the best candidate, not voting. And there's a lot of white people who voted for President Obama who wanted to vote for him because they wanted to vote in the first black president. Mm-hmm. And I did have some people say, you know what, if this guy does a great job, I don't want someone to say I'm a racist because I didn't vote for him. I voted for McCain. And I think one of the things we have found since he got elected is I think it's freed up some of more your more brave black conservatives who maybe weren't, as Michael Steele said, out of the closet beforehand, because now that this has occurred, it's maybe given them a little leeway to go out and speak out on what they actually believe and see, okay, well, it's over, it's done with, now where do we go from here? And I think 2012 is where do we go from here type of an election, and I'm hoping in the black community, urban community, as well as suburban community, whatever happens November 6th, November 7th, we're all still the same country we were and supporting our president and supporting a positive direction for the country.
Well, I think the election is a referendum on God, and that's why it's important. We have, for the first time ever in the history of this nation, a president come out directly in opposition to something that God said. Directly in support of something that God said was an abomination to him, and was something that he hated. And this time, it's not about this man's skin color, which is what I think it was about in 2008. This time it is, are you going to support the biblical mandates that God set before us, or are you going to choose to support what man has is saying? So I think for the first time we're going to see perhaps some people staying home because they can't vote for President Obama because of the position that he's taken with gay marriage and abortion. Those are two critical issues that God said. He said he hates the shedding of innocent blood. He said same-sex unions or whatever you want to call them are an abomination to him. Now, this nation, despite all of the hype and rhetoric that the president has given us over the last 4 years, America is still considered a Christian nation. It is still a nation where the majority of us say we believe in Jesus Christ, the risen Savior. And so we have to decide this time, are we going to go in there and cast a vote for someone who has directly placed himself in opposition to the God we say we serve and believe in, or are we not going to do that? That's the question, and that's what makes this election particularly important in my mind. Because if we go down the path of supporting someone that has spoken openly against the God that we say we love and serve, I fear for the nation. I fear for the people. I fear for my children, my grandchildren, because to me that would be a point of no return. There would be no turning back at that point, and we would be ushering in the book of Revelation.
If I might add, I think Catherine eloquently stated that. I mean, when you have one party at their convention boo and vote down initially the word God in their platform, and then, you know, the kangaroo court vote that they did, it was so obvious on television that the mayor of Los Angeles, the deputy chair of that convention, completely ignored the thousands of people in his audience
no.
who wanted to not. Yeah. I mean, it was completely obvious, and that is where, okay, yeah, where are we going to go as a country? Because this past CPAC, my favorite moment was 9 o'clock in the morning when Governor Huckabee stood up to a room full of probably mainly Baptists and folks who are not Catholic, and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we are all Catholics now." And the place stood up and erupted because of what's happened with Obamacare and the attacks on the Catholic Church enforcing abortions and contraception. And this is going to be, and I think my own mayor in the film, Mayor Palmer, he's talked about it in there. There are going to be elections when a lot of African Americans that won't come out and vote Republican, and Catherine just talked about that. but they're going to stay home. And I think, yeah, we're going to see a lot of that. And one of the shames that's going to happen at this election, too, it was just announced a few weeks ago that a lot of the major polling firms are pulling out of 19 of the bigger states that they usually poll. So we're not going to have really good numbers to base on what happened with the African-American vote in this election going forward.
619-638-8559 on the air with Captain Davis and Kevin Williams, producer of Fear of a Black Republican. You know, I think this election is that much deeper. And, you know, for folks who don't get into social issues, because, you know, when you have conversations with people, they seem to regress. And when you bring up the social issues, they go, well, you know, I don't really get into all of that, and we shouldn't be in the bedroom, and I shouldn't be in anybody's religion, and this, that, and the other. So there's a lot of people out here, whether we like it or not, that look at this thing from a fiscal aspect, and they still support the president who spent more than George Bush in 3.5 years, spent more than George Bush did in 8 years. And those facts you can't debate. I mean, those are facts. So if you're looking at this fiscally, why aren't people paying attention to what is fact-based versus what is fiction? It seems that people are gravitating to the president no matter what facts you throw out there. No matter what, that people are gravitating.
But this is the deception, Pudgy. This is the deception. You just said it. People are not turning away from the social issues. The pro-abortion, pro-homosexual marriage people have ramped mm-hmm. their game up. They're not backing down. I mean,
no,
you look
not.
At what happened at the Democrat National Convention. You had these women. I mean, there was a commercial or something that came out afterwards talking about vote with your uterus.
Yeah.
The conservatives that are backing up, and that is the shame of it, because we are now selling our souls for money, 20 pieces of silver, rather than Ooh. Standing strong on the Ooh. On the issues that God says we should be standing for. So the President Obama has made it extremely clear. He says it. I'm not backing down, and neither is Planned Parenthood. Now, to the black community,
right.
we should be shaking in our boots like we just heard from the KKK.
Yeah.
Because who is the number one customer of Planned Parenthood? Who is the number one customer of abortion in America today?
Black females.
It's the black community. And in New York City, for every 1,000 black babies born alive, 1,448 are aborted. That is depopulation. And so for us to sit back and say this nonsense about a woman having the right to choose and not understanding the deception that's inherent in that, and a friend of mine, Arnold Colbreth, with Protecting Black Life, just put up on his website, protectingblacklife.org, a map that shows where Planned Parenthood's surgical facilities are located. And every single surgical procedure, something like 80-something percent of their surgical facilities are located within walking distance of a black or Latino neighborhood.
Wow.
And you think that we're not being targeted? The same thing with homosexuals. I just saw a report that said, asked the question, what percentage of Americans are homosexual? And people were saying 25%, 30%, 40%, and the poll came back 3.4%. So less than 4% of the population of this nation are dictating the direction
of the
that we're going to go in, and we're not shaking in our boots. This is about God, and we must, as Christians, every single Christian has to understand what's being put on the table, because that's what they're going to be held accountable for at the end of time. And we can say
Amen.
We're backing away from abortion and gay marriage, but shame on us, because they're running, as the president says, forward.
Wow. Well,
if I could just do it real quick,
sure.
The stereotype also is, and we get these questions mainly from white liberals for some reason, is that is the appeal of the Republican Party or to African Americans split their ticket is it's purely social issues. And in a lot of cases, that is an important way to get the conversation started. But what happens over time is I think both parties are really sitting back and thinking, well, black people aren't as concerned about the economy as everyone else are. They're not concerned about foreign policy as much as everyone else is. And there's a real fallacy with that. One of the things I will freely attribute, at least in my own party, I think sometimes there's a tendency to not realize there are a lot of folks, they're not in the cities. They live in the suburbs. They've gone to college. They have master's degrees. Some have PhDs or doctors, your lawyers, your business owners. And those folks want a conversation too. And since you keep generalizing the argument or accepting what the Democrats do in many cases, which is keeping things in the discussion of public assistance and things along that way, or falling into the easy traps of racist language in some mm-hmm. ways, I think the Republican Party really doesn't necessarily advance its own cause, nor advance the cause of black people within the political system. And if they did, besides getting their own views across, they'd sure as heck challenge the Democratic Party to explain all its views and not get the free pass that they've been getting, you know, since well before Dr. King and what happened with Richard Nixon and MLK. JFK. Because this has been going on for 40, 50 years, and if Democrats have had free reign to tell people whatever they want to say without any challenge to it. But one of the things when it comes to social issues is the Republican Party generally has a very good record to speak of and can talk to those issues. The problem is getting them to come to the community like Catherine did and like some folks are out there have been doing and getting that support and staying behind them and showing them that, yeah, we're here, we're real, and we're not going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And until they do that, I mean, what Catherine did, that was God's work in my book.
Amen to that.
And we got to help, you know, those who are the servants of the Lord, we got to help them further than we've been helping in the past, because as so goes our urban community, so goes the country.
That's right.
That's B.I.G. in my book, as I always say on this show. Captain is B.I.G. in my book. Listen, man, I think anybody that knows me, and this is just speaking from my heart, it's all social to me. I'm not saying that I don't care about fiscal issues. I understand, you know, African-Americans, we spend what amount of money we spend in this economy, what amount of money we spend in this country. I think it's like $25 billion in Target retail or the Target market retail or something like that. And I mean, it's quite amazing that we spend more money than we actually save if you look at the statistics. But for me, it's all social, and that's where the buck stops. If you are not pro-life, I will not vote for you. If you are not pro-Christ, I will not vote for you. I'm sorry, that's just me. And that's my right to do. That's my right to choose. That's my vote. So I always try to tell people this, you know, vote with your principles. And I think our principles are what drives us through life. I mean, if you look at the way we raise our children, the way we live in our households, the way we worship, those are the true principles that we just don't break. Despite all the talk and the conversations we have and the disagreements we have, most of us don't sway away from our principles. But what I found about this election is very different than that. You know, like Catherine said earlier, just referring to that, we have a lot of voters, a lot of Christians who aren't going to vote just based off the fact that they feel like they got to stay home because they're not going to vote for Mitt Romney. They're going to stay home. They're not going to vote against the person who is pro-life. Rather than keep that man out of office, they're just going to stay home and not contribute at all. And I find something, to me, you should be a little bit guilty behind that. You know, I'm not saying that you should vote for Mitt Romney. I'm not supporting Mitt Romney. I'm not a supporter of Mitt Romney. But I'm saying if you got somebody who distinctly stands against what God's word is and you find yourself a true believer of God and you're not willing to stand up for that, if anything, I think there's something wrong with you. But that's just my opinion. And you know, a lot of people, they get there, as one of my good rednecks buddies said, they get their panties in the wad when they when you start making comments like that and they just don't like it. So and they feel like they have the right to do this. But, you know, a lot of stuff that I've been seeing, though, I've actually seen on Facebook, and this is probably one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen in my life. But I saw where someone posted a message that they had to delete their friend. And I know it's Facebook. Don't just bear with me, folks. But I had to delete one of their friends because they were disrespecting their president. And then she went on to say fake Christians. And, you know, I looked at that comment and I asked myself, is this the state of America today? Is this where we are? Is this what we're going to stand for? If this is the moment where we are to stand for God or have our head chopped off, our heads have been chopped off and they're rolling down the street.
Well, that's the time I think we're in. And unfortunately, we in the body of Christ haven't done a strong enough job, I think, to help people to understand that they're about to get their heads cut off. Because we have been so politically controlled by partisanship, by the party. So, if you know, many blacks will stay home this time because they won't vote against God by voting for Barack Obama, but they'll stay home and not vote at all because we've had such a divide in this country about Republican, Democrat, and to the point that Democrat today almost means black, because if a black person like Tavis Smiley or Cornel West or somebody says something, what's the young lady, Stacey Dash,
mm-hmm.
or somebody, then we ain't black because we came out and said we support somebody other than President Obama. So mm-hmm. that means I'm not black anymore. That is just the most ridiculous thing, and yet that's the state of affairs in this country. And those of us who understand the political process and understand what's at stake, we have to do a better job of educating the grassroots people and breaking down that chasm that has been getting wider and wider, and that's why we don't need to, Kevin, persuade folks to become Republican, but to persuade them to vote their values. And if we could just do that, if we could get black people to vote what they say they believe, it would change the political structure of this country overnight.
I definitely agree with that.
Is it's been sadly fascinating how many people, millions of folks who came on the voter rolls to vote for President Obama in 2008, and I've seen figures guesstimating near 70-75% have never been back to vote in a local election or a primary election.
Period, yeah.
And that's how many people who are now undecided voters, shall we say, or independent voters, who haven't gotten into that habit or maybe aren't as politically aware as, you know, three of us, or I'm sure many, many of your listeners are. And it, further, one of the things that's been surprising, we took the film out on in the country, and Catherine was at our premiere in Atlanta. And when we went to Charlotte and Greensboro and other places, particularly Charlotte and Greensboro, how many younger African-Americans under, I'd say, 30, 35, mm-hmm. were supporters of Ron Paul, or even in the Q&A, and say, I'm not ever going to be a Democrat. I'm not ever going to be a Republican. I'm going to be an independent.
I like
that.
Because
I don't believe in your two-party system.
I like that.
I want more than one choice. And how many folks have told us across the country they would never have registered for any political party if they didn't have to vote in a primary?
Wow. I'm an avid supporter of independency. I tell people all the time, you know, I wish that everybody could be registered independents, or we had more registered independents so more attention would be paid to the independent vote. But, you know, that even has some issues in the political process. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that need to change in this whole process, man. And there's a lot of light that needs to be shined on situations, if you will, or behind-the-scenes candidacies, or what you want to call pork in some of this legislation that we see. And it doesn't all end with the presidency. You know, there's a Congress, you know, that you have to worry about and that we have to vote on as well. And what I find is that a lot of people are commenting or getting so involved with this presidency, but when it comes to local elections, they almost either don't care, or because those local elections aren't as loud, they don't hear about them, or they don't know when it's time to vote for local elections. So, you know, what I try to do through this show, I mean, we're not going anywhere, man. We've been here before and after. And what I'm going to try my best to do is shine some light on local elections and talk about things like that so people will be more informed and understand how important it is to vote for your city council member, your mayor, your governor, your sheriff, your school board, you know, whatever, man. I just think we all need to be involved with these processes so we'll understand how things work and just not get so riled up with the presidency or the president race and forget about everything else because it's more than just the president's race, you know, in my book. Kevin, on this movie, Fear of a Black Republican, you guys covered a lot of information and you talked to a lot of people. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, was there a defining moment or what was the moment when you knew that, hey, you know what, this is the movie I need to be doing. And no matter what, I'm going to keep going with this thing. Was there a moment that made you look at what you were doing and it kind of solidified your work?
I'd say two. The first moment was Katrina, just because, you know, watching on television how the media was covering it and, you know, who was getting accused of what, that really told me a lot. But the defining moment was when I saw, and in some ways how that played out in the bigger sense, was actually Catherine and her campaign. When I had the opportunity, and I truly believe this came from God, meeting Catherine, and we just hit it off, whatever the good reason. We had some good conversations, and I think she trusted me. She had hopefully a good feeling. I certainly did. I was fascinated by what she was trying to do, felt a kinship, because I didn't notice until later on how close demographically DeKalb County, particularly in that district, was to where I live in Trenton. But following her campaign and seeing the experience of what a Black Republican, and this is a Black Republican running for Congress, it's not running for city council or dog catcher, and that solidified absolutely what's wrong with both parties, what's wrong with the system, but more so for me, what's wrong with my own party. And I went into this, I was definitely more naive. I was, you know, big, the Jimmy Stewart goes to Washington, you know, we can all work it out. And, you know, the national anthem in the background. And then really after going through that and seeing the results and how dumb my own party was, that really solidified, because it also, I think, opened my eyes and reinforced what I was seeing in Trenton and New Jersey was the same in Georgia. And probably if it was the same in Georgia, it was the same in Louisiana and other places. And where the bottleneck really came from was Catherine had a great, okay, I'll help you conversation with the chairman of the party, the guy, the person at the top.
Sure.
And nothing happened from the top to the state level to the county level to where she needed it on the ground. And that's where our problem is, in my opinion, is that the middle person, that middle level between the state party and the county parties.
Nice. I think that's wonderful.
I can tell you, it was a little, I did not realize at the time when Kevin and I met, we actually met at CPAC, and he said, well, can I come film you? I'm like, sure, come on. I had no idea he was going to be following me around for a few days. So when he premiered the movie here in Atlanta and I had a dear friend of mine with me, she said, oh, you didn't tell me the movie was going to be mostly about you. I said, I did not know that. I thought he was going to take one or two clips from, you know, with my team out there waving or something, you know, in and out kind of thing. I did not realize I was going to be on the big screen like that, and that was very disconcerting.
Wow. Hey,
you
Catherine,
look great. Don't worry.
She knows that, though. She knows that.
Oh,
y'all,
I know. Now, everybody,
y'all know what time that is.
If I tell you, this is across the country. We've been in places like Kansas, Texas, Arizona, Jackson State University, Jackson, Mississippi, up north here. When Catherine is on the screen, people connect with her, whether they're Democrat, Republican, white, black, et cetera. And I'll tell you what we have loved, and because when we made this film, we were in a cocoon on a third floor bench, spare bedroom in our townhouse here in Trenton, row home, and we didn't know until we showed the film in Atlanta, did we have a good film or not? But since we showed it in Atlanta, when people see that Catherine sequence in our movie, no matter what they came walking in as, whether they hated all Republicans, thought they were racist, or they loved all Republicans and thought they were amazing, she gets people to really feel what it's like to be a black Republican in the Republican Party, what they have to go through. And I think on a human level, I think she really gets a lot of folks to open their eyes and open their ears. Whether they agree with what she believes, they really have never met someone like Catherine. And she's a, I mean, on screen, you've seen it. And yeah, she's a winner. You just have a natural, you root for the person, like in any great movie, you have a character to root for. And for us as a character, and we had to look at Catherine as a character in a sense, was that they want to root for her. They want to see her win. They want to see her do well. And they want to see her succeed against all the odds.
Well, I think if we get this movie out to more folks and we can beg Catherine to run again, you know, maybe we can get her to win. I know I'm all in. I mean, Kevin's all in.
For sure.
What do you think, Catherine? Can we beg you to run for Congress again?
I don't think so. I want to end abortion. That's my heart. My heart today is to end this scourge on our nation. And so my energies are being really directed towards that, particularly when you look at the black community and the impact that abortion is having. It is just absolutely heartbreaking, and I just want to end it. If I could do that, I'd be happy. Then I could go home and be with Jesus.
Amen on that. You know, that fight is, and shout out to Chaplain Viviana too, man. Shout out to Tim Johnson and Kevin Daniels, North Carolina president. My whole Frederick Douglass team, and Aisha out there in New York, president of New York. Shout out to my whole Frederick Douglass Foundation family, my team, my comrades, whatever you want to call it. But these folks are out here working, man. If you guys don't know that there are people out here working for your interest, there are. There are people out here working, and they're making noise, and, you know, they're ruffling feathers. And, you know, there are people out here, man, trying to do the best thing in righteousness for all people. And, you know, if you don't know, there are people out there. So Frederick Douglass Foundation, look them up, man, tfdf.org or tfdfnc.org. That's the North Carolina page. And we also got a New York one. I'm not sure what the site is right now. Maybe we can get that in a few. Kevin, hit him up, fearforblackrepublican.com. My show, KIRPradioshow.com. We're on iTunes, you know, Blog Talk, whatever. There are people out here working, man, and people like Catherine, you, Kevin, I commend you guys because I know firsthand what it takes to spend all your time, basically all your time for the best interests of other people and not be appreciated by it. So, you know, I commend you guys, man, and I appreciate you and thank you guys from the bottom of my heart, from me and my entire family, because without you guys, you know, we would really be lost. There wouldn't be any hope at all. I was so glad to find Catherine and that Frederick Douglass Foundation group and family, because, you know, for a moment as a young black man out here, I felt lost. I'm like, there's no hope. I can't open folks' eyes to the history that I stumbled upon and that I read and know to be the truth versus what I was taught in elementary school or what I was taught in my home, you know, through family who didn't know as well and friends who didn't know as well. You know, I thank God for that, man. And I think it's a blessing that, you know, we got people out here that are fighting. So, you know, like I said, man, I can't say it enough. I thank you guys for what you do. And, you know, the pro-life fight is something that takes a lot out of me. I get downright mad, fighting mad, ready to get it popping, as they say where I'm from, when you start talking about these pro-life issues. Because, you know, people want to argue a choice. And that, like I always say, a choice is something that I cannot take away from you. You got the choice to walk out in front of a big Freightliner, Mack truck, whatever you call it. Go kill yourself if you want. That's your business. I don't want you to do it. But, hey, guess what? This is your choice to do. I'm not trying to take anybody's choice away. All I'm saying is that look at the statistics. Look at what's really going on. Look around you. Pay attention to the things that are right before you, right before your eyes, and think about the responsibility that people aren't taking upon for themselves. Why are we talking about choice when we are basically being exterminated now today by ourselves, if you will? Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how you find a choice argument out of that. you know, when you say clearly, I'm not trying to take your choice away. I'm just saying, can we be more responsible? Can we do the responsible thing? Can you have a human? Can you have enough love in your body to admit that it's wrong, despite whether you did it or not? You know, I don't like to bash people. I'm not trying to beat people over the head who have had an abortion before. You know, I don't want people to look at it like we're trying to beat you over the head and remind you of the error that you made in life. All I'm saying is that you pay attention to what's really going on. And you know, people really want to debate choice. I don't care to debate choice. You know, and that bothers me.
Because for them, the choice is synonymous with taking the life of the baby. If you, as a woman, decide I want to keep the baby, then you're looked down upon, you're looked at with disdain, like something is wrong with you for choosing life. And so it's a misnomer that Planned Parenthood and others have been successful in embedding in the community to make us think that it's about choice, but it's really not. It's about population control.
Sure it is.
And the elite reducing the populations to those that they feel should be allowed to live. And quite frankly, that would not be me, Pudgy. It wouldn't be you. It wouldn't be Kevin.
That's right.
None of us would make the cut.
Absolutely right.
So, yeah.
Well, Kevin,
wonderful time with you guys. Thank you so much, Pudgy, for letting me come on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Catherine. And as you know, if there's anything we can do for you, you know, hit us on the horn. You got the number, you got the email address. You know how to contact me for sure. And we are at your disposal.
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for
Kevin,
coming on.
Good chatting with you again.
Hold on, you can't leave yet. No.
I can't leave? Okay.
No, you can't go. You got to give a shout out before you leave here. You got to shout somebody out. We do shout outs on this show.
I really want to give a shout out to my all of my pro-life warrior friends, Alveda King, Dean Nelson, Walter Hoy, Stephen Broden, Ryan Bomberger, Arnold Culbreth, especially Arnold Culbreth, guys. Go to protectingblacklife.org and just look at that map that Arnold has produced that shows where the Planned Parenthood facilities are. And I want to give a special shout out to Kevin's baby. Hug the baby.
Thank you very much.
Now we have
two of them.
Yes, uh-oh. I remembered. I said babies. Tell them their black grandmother in Georgia's sending love.
Well, they love meeting you in Atlanta. They did. My daughter still talks about that every time she sees the movie.
Yeah.
I remember Catherine Davis. And actually, if I have 30 seconds, I want to tell you the power Catherine has. I work at the New Jersey State Museum sometimes, and our state house is right down the street, not even like 200 feet. And as I was walking home a few months ago, there was a pro-choice rally out front. And sure enough, they had a woman, African-American, she said she was from Newark, and she starts reading off a litany of charges about this, that, and the other thing. And she goes, and the worst part of it is they got an African-American woman named Catherine Davis trying to convince women to keep their babies.
Oh,
and it was
God.
Just
You're
amazing. Kidding. This was on State Street, Governor Christie State House. I kid you not.
Wow.
You are powerful.
Wow.
Yeah, but I was just, it was just amazing to walk down the street 880 miles away from you and to hear this lady so concerned that you're being effective.
Wow.
Right on. Power to the people.
Thanks, Catherine. Appreciate you coming through, man. I thank you for coming through, and I will be in touch to bring you back on again, and we'll talk about some more other stuff.
Absolutely. God bless, guys. Have a great evening.
You too, Catherine. You
All right,
too.
You too. Pleasure. Kevin, I know, my brother. I know we didn't get to talk enough about the movie. And will
do that. That was awesome.
And, you know, this show, man, one thing about it's, you know, we always start out talking about one thing, and sometimes we evolve into other topics, and we move on and on and on, and we go on. And, you know, before you know it, we've covered the whole map and the whole encyclopedia, a whole encyclopedia full of topics. So, you know, that's just how we go, man. We kind of go with the flow. But I definitely thank you for coming on the show. And I definitely thank you for letting me view the movie and also getting the poster. I appreciate that, too. That'll be framed, and we'll have that up, and I'll get you to sign it one day. But, you know, thanks for what you do, man, and your movie. And let the people know out there if you have any future events or anything else that's going on or that we need to be aware of.
Folks want to see the film now, the DVD, we have it for sale on our website, fearofablackrepublican.com, as well as they can stream it on their own computer. We just got that set up last week, and that's $4.99. You can watch it over a 24-hour period, and we're hoping by end of this week we should be up on iTunes, so they can go to our website, fearofablackrepublican.com, and they can also go to actually to Amazon.com, Amazon, to buy the DVD. And I did also want to put out there, because you mentioned VCR users. I'm a VCR user. Don't give up your VCR yet, folks. But also, if you have any people, any of the listeners who want to get involved in filmmaking, I always say when I used to run a film festival, there's a housewife or someone who's an accountant who has an Oscar-winning screenplay, but they just don't know it yet. If they have any filmmaking questions, please send them to me, director@fearofablackrepublican.com. I'd be happy to help you out or point you in the right direction. There's a lot of things that we've learned, books that we have used, and would like to, you know, give that knowledge on to other people to help them.
Well, you know, as I told you before, you know, we got these seminars coming up, man, and I'm going to try my best to coordinate with your schedule and try to have you come out and talk to some folks, because I know a lot of screenwriters and a lot of people who do plays and, you know, they just write and really don't know what to do with it. So I think it would be an awesome idea to bring yourself and some music executives that I know, you know, bring you guys in and we just, you know, have a chat about that and kind of help people along the way, man. And, you know, whatever accommodations we got to do, we'll definitely take care of that. But I'm so looking forward to that. And next year, that's a big event that we're going to have every year. We're going to try every month, excuse me. We're going to try to have these things. So shout out to my brother, Kevin Daniels and Rashad Woods, Loving Father Society, Katessa Woods also with the Travel Beyond. And, you know, man, we're just working, brother. So, you know, Kevin, I'll be reaching out and don't be afraid to reach out to me, man. I'm all over the country and I've got connections all over the place. So if I can help you in any way, you just let me know, my brother. And I'm definitely willing, because what you're doing is valiant in my book, and it's a valiant effort, and, you know, it's very much needed.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's been an honor to be with you. And you're doing a lot of great good yourself. And I just like to have, you know, want folks to know there are a lot of great people out there. Maybe they're not covered by the media like they should, but don't give up hope that there aren't a lot of other folks trying. But thank you so much for having us on. This has been a big, big one for us.
Hey, you're welcome. And before we go, we got like 30 seconds, but I need you to give us a shout out, if you will.
Oh, God, love to get a shout-out. Kevin Daniels, Earl Phillips in Charlotte, Ada Fisher I had a chance to meet, Kyle Suggs, a lot of great people, Mia Love out in Utah, Crystal Wright, conservative blackchick.com, somebody I want you to check out. If you haven't seen, she was on BET last week. Vivica A. Fox gave her all kinds of heck for what she believes politically. She's someone I'd really encourage people to take a look at. And just all the family and friends we met down in North Carolina, and Catherine Davis and George and her team, Wyleen, Cindy, everybody. Just we had a lot of great support, and thank you all so much.
There it is, folks. Fear of a Black Republican producer, editor, great gentleman, great man all the way around, Kevin Williams, man. Round of applause for you, my brother. Definitely appreciate what you do, man, and I hope that you get a number one movie on a big screen, man. I hope the next thing you do is huge and it's on a big screen, number one. How about that?
That would be awesome. And if I do, you're in it.
No doubt. Appreciate you coming through, brother. Be blessed.
Thank you. God bless everybody. Have a good night.
All right, you too. God bless you as well. That's it, folks. Thank you for listening to the KRP Radio Show. Sorry, I got a whole host of people on the queue that wanted to say something and had comments. We kind of got going, and you guys know I run my mouth a little bit too much. Please tune in next week, man. We'll be right back with another wonderful show. You guys look for the topic, KIRPRadioShow.com. We're also on iTunes, 5.6 million listeners, plus. Catch us on Twitter, @KRP Radio Show, @NC Pudgy. We definitely do it. And you guys are definitely B-I-G in my book. And I appreciate you guys for listening to this show every week and holding us down, man. You guys make us the number one black talk conservative radio show, Southeastern United States, and I definitely appreciate the love. One love. We catch you guys next week.